There is astounding information available to the dedicated researcher in our libraries, at least those few that have not yet engaged in the politically correct frenzy of selling off or throwing away all books published before 1965. There is even valuable information available on the major news wire services, if one has access to them as we do here, or even hidden away on the back pages of a few newspapers. The problem is that this information, even when its dissemination is vital to the survival of our nation, is not brought to the attention of our people because of the anti-American bias and control of our major news media. Today I will present to you, without comment, quotations from a wide variety of sources. Decide for yourself their meaning and import in this age of increasing repression and thought control. Decide for yourself if the controlled media have deliberately misinformed you. First, we have the following report, which was issued by the Associated Press, Dateline Washington. Quote, "World population is growing at the fastest pace ever, and virtually all growth is in the third world, according to a survey released Tuesday by a research group. The annual survey by the Washington-based Population Reference Bureau said, "We are at a point where, except for the United States, population growth is essentially a third world phenomenon." The survey predicted world population will exceed 5.5 billion this year, 40% of it in China and India. The Bureau said population is growing each year by 90 million, roughly the population of Mexico. Carl Haub, a demographer who worked on the study, said that world population will grow to 8.5 billion by the year 2025. Only if birth rates continue to come down as expected. If they don't, growth will be even faster. Haub said that if it were not for the relatively high U.S. increase, all growth in the world would be in poor areas. The U.S. increase is largely due to immigration and growth among non-whites. White Americans are failing to reproduce themselves. Europe's population is virtually stagnant, with a growth rate of 0.2% a year. This virtually guarantees population decline by the turn of the century, Haub said. States of the former Soviet Union have been growing at 0.6%, but there was a wide gap between Russia and Ukraine, where population is declining, and the Muslim republics of Central Asia, which are growing at more than 2%. The world's fastest growing area is the poorest, sub-Saharan Africa, with a population growth rate of 3% a year, meaning that population will double there in 20 years. Latin America is growing at 1.9%. Asia is growing at a rate of 1.7%. But without China, whose strict and controversial birth control program is responsible for a sharp drop, Asia's rate is 2.1%. Close quote. Next, we hear from writer Peter Brimelow in the Miami Herald. Quote, "Just as New York City's government can't stop muggers, but does a great job ticketing young women on Park Avenue for failing to scoop up after their lap dogs, current U.S. immigration policy, in effect, enforces the law only against those who obey it. Annual legal immigration of some 950,000, counting 140,000 refugees and the 100,000 granted political asylum, is overwhelmed by the 2 to 3 million illegal entries into the country every year. American liberals, of course, are determinedly, even devoutly, incurious about this subject. You quickly learn not to raise such matters with them at all. The silence of American conservatives has a more complex cause. To a significant degree, it's due to sheer ignorance. Very few people can absorb new realities after the age of 21, and conservative leaders, now in their 50s, spent their formative years in one of the greatest lulls in the history of American immigration, the result of restrictive quota legislation designed to favor Northern Europeans in the 1920s, followed by the Depression and World War II. Amazingly, only about 500,000 legal immigrants entered the U.S. in the whole of the 1930s. In those days, there was virtually no illegal immigration. And only about 1 million entered in the 1940s, including World War II refugees. By contrast, of course, the U.S. accepted over 1.5 million immigrants, counting only legals, in the single year of 1990 alone. The great immigration lull was ended dramatically by the 1965 Immigration Act. Typical of so many great society reforms, it was passed amid much moralizing rhetoric and promptly had exactly the opposite of its advertised effect. U.S. immigration policy was not transformed without debate. There was a debate. It just bore no relationship to what subsequently happened. In particular, staunch defenders of the national origins quota system, like the American Legion, allowed themselves to be persuaded that the new legislation really enacted a sort of worldwide quota, no longer skewed toward Northern Europe, a policy easily caricatured as racist in the era of the civil rights movement, but still restricting overall immigration to the then current level of around 300,000. Today, it is astonishing to read the categorical assurances given by the supporters of the 1965 Immigration Act. "What the bill will not do," summarized Immigration Subcommittee Chairman Senator Edward Kennedy. "First, our cities will not be flooded with 1 million immigrants annually. Under the proposed bill, the present level of immigration remains substantially the same. Secondly, the ethnic mix will not be upset. Contrary to the charges in some quarters, the bill will not inundate America with immigrants from any one country or area or the most populated and deprived nations of Africa and Asia." Every one of these assurances has proved false. Close quote. Next, we go back in time to hear the words of Sir Francis Galton from his Hereditary Talent and Character, published in 1865. Quote, "Our human civilized stock is far more weakly through congenital imperfection than any other species of animal, whether wild or domestic. If the 20th part of the cost and pains were spent in measures for the improvement of the human race that is spent on the improvement of the breed of horse and cattle, what a galaxy of genius might we not create?" Close quote. The scientist Charles Darwin said in his Descent of Man, published in 1871, quote, "We now know, through the admirable labors of Mr. Galton, that genius tends to be inherited." Close quote. Darwin's colleague Alfred Russel Wallace stated in 1872, quote, "In one of my latest conversations with Darwin, he expressed himself very gloomily on the future of humanity, on the ground that in our modern civilization, natural selection had no play, and the fittest did not survive." Close quote. The great writer and author of Brave New World, Aldous Huxley, wrote in his Brave New World Revisited in 1958, quote, "In this second half of the 20th century, we do nothing systematic about our breeding, but in our random and unregulated way, we are not only overpopulating our planet, we are also, it would seem, making sure that these greater numbers shall be of biologically poorer quality." Close quote. From the pen of Dr. Alexander Graham Bell, best known for his invention of the telephone and his founding of the National Geographic Society, We read in his 1898 article in the Journal of Heredity, quote, "At the present time, considerable alarm has been expressed at the apparently growing disinclination of American women to bear children, and a cry has been raised against what people call race suicide." Close quote. From the New York Times of February 11, 1986, we read from an article entitled, "Half of U.S. Couples Can't Have Babies." Quote, "Nearly half of all white couples of childbearing age in the United States are physically unable to have children, as Americans increasingly choose sterilization to limit their new families, according to government statistics." Close quote. Next, we again go back in time to quote from President Abraham Lincoln in one of the famous Lincoln-Douglas debates. Quote, "I will say then that I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the white and black races. That I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of making voters or jurors of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. And I will say in addition to this that there is a physical difference between the white and black races which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality." Close quote. Next, from his Notes for Speeches, September 1859, Collected Works, Volume 3, page 399, we read the words of Abraham Lincoln. Quote, "Negro equality. Fudge. How long in the government of a God great enough to make and maintain the universe shall there continue knaves to vend and fools to gulp so low a piece of demagogism as this?" Close quote. From Abraham Lincoln's Address on Colonization to a Deputation of Negroes in Washington, D.C. on August 14, 1862, Collected Works, Volume 5, page 371, we read the following, quote, "See our present condition, the country engaged in war, our white men cutting one another's throats, and then consider what we know to be truth. But for your race among us, there could not be war, although many men engaged on either side do not care for you one way or the other. It is better for us both, therefore, to be separated. You and we are different races. We have between us a broader difference than exists between almost any other two races. Whether it is right or wrong, I need not discuss. But this physical difference is a great disadvantage to us both, as I think your race suffer very greatly, many of them by living among us, while ours suffers from your presence. In a word, we suffer on each side. If this is admitted, it affords a reason, at least, why we should be separated." Close quote. Our next quote without comment is from Thomas Jefferson's autobiography, first published by his grandson Thomas Jefferson Randolph in 1829 and again published by Special Act of Congress in 1853. I quote from page 51, dated January 6, 1821. Quote, "Nothing is more certainly written in the book of fate than that these people, the blacks, are to be free. Nor is it less certain that the two races equally free cannot live in the same government. Nature, habit, opinion have drawn indelible lines of distinction between them. It is still in our power to direct the process of emancipation and deportation peaceably, and in such slow degree that as the evil will wear off insensibly, and their place be filled up by free white laborers. If, on the contrary, it is left to force itself on, human nature must shudder at the prospect held up." close quote. Our next item is a statement from black nationalist leader Malcolm X, who said, quote, "Give us some land of our own and let us go for ourselves," close quote. And now this revealing quote from a leading operative of the New World Order and former director of the UN's World Health Organization, a Mr. Brock Chisholm, as printed in USA Magazine for August 12, 1955. Quote, "What people everywhere must do is practice birth control and miscegenation in order to create one race in one world under one government." Close quote. Next we hear from Reverend George E. Simons, who as the superintendent of the Methodist Episcopal Church in Petrograd from 1907 to 1918, was an eyewitness to the Bolshevik Revolution. He testified before the United States Senate, and his statement can be found in Volume 3 of United States Senate Document Number 62, 66th Congress, First Session. Quote, "Out of 388 members of the new Russian government, only 16 happened to be Russians. One was an American black. All the rest, 371, were Jews. Of these 371 Jewish Bolshevik leaders, no less than 265 of them were from the Lower East Side of New York City." Close quote. From the Jewish World of February 9, 1883, we read, quote, "The great ideal of Judaism is that the whole world shall be imbued with Jewish teachings, and that in a universal brotherhood of nations, a greater Judaism in fact, all the separate races and religions shall disappear." Close quote. In The American Hebrew of September 10, 1920, we read this, quote, "The Bolshevist Revolution in Russia was the work of Jewish brains, of Jewish dissatisfaction, of Jewish planning, whose goal is to create a new order in the world. What was performed in so excellent a way in Russia shall also, through the same Jewish mental and physical forces, become a reality all over the world." Close quote. In the American Bulletin of May 15, 1935, Rabbi Stephen S. Wise stated, quote, "Some call it Marxism. I call it Judaism." Close quote. From the book The 19th Century and After, published in London in November 1923, page 695, author Henry Pearson tells us, quote, "The Bolsheviks have employed every form of cruelty it is possible to devise and gloat over the sufferings of their victims. The movement is run almost exclusively by Jews. Nearly every commissar is a Jew, and nearly all of them speak English, most of them with an American accent." Close quote. Jewish author Dr. Lewis Harrop, in the magazine Jewish Life for June 1951, page 20, reveals, quote, "On May 29, 1950, in the Chicago Tribune, three prominent American Jews, Felix Frankfurter, Henry Morgenthau Jr., and Herbert H. Lehman, were called the secret government of the United States and were linked with world communism. The article was written by Walter Trohan, the Tribune's top Washington editor." Close quote. In an interview with a New York Times reporter on Christmas 1921, the great industrialist and patriot Henry Ford stated as follows, quote, "It was the Jews themselves who convinced me of the direct relationship between the international Jew and war. In fact, they went out of their way to convince me. On the peace ship were two very prominent Jews. We had not been at sea 200 miles before they began telling me of the power of the Jewish race, of how they controlled the world through their control of gold, and that the Jew, and no one but the Jew, could end the war. I was reluctant to believe it, but they went into detail to convince me of the means by which the Jews controlled the war, how they had the money, how they had cornered all the basic materials needed to fight the war, and all that. And they talked so long and so well that they convinced me. They said, and they believed, that the Jews started the war, that they would continue it as long as they wished, and that until the Jews stopped the war, it could not be stopped. I was so disgusted, I would have liked to turn the ship back. Close quote. Jewish international banker James Paul Warburg, in a speech before the United States Senate on February 17, 1950, said, quote, "We shall have world government, whether or not we like it. The only question is whether world government will be achieved by conquest or consent." Close quote. In a letter written in the last century to Karl Marx, reprinted in La Revue de Paris for June 1, 1928, Jewish writer Baruch Levy stated, and note carefully the phraseology he employed, quote, "The Jewish people as a whole will be its own Messiah. It will attain world domination by the dissolution of other races, by the abolition of frontiers, the annihilation of monarchy, and by the establishment of a world republic in which the Jews will everywhere exercise the privilege of citizenship. In this new world order, the children of Israel will furnish all the leaders without encountering opposition." Close quote. On October 13, 1939, the following broadcast was made by the great aviator and patriot Charles Lindbergh, a part of his effort to prevent the horrible slaughter of World War II. In this case, I have an actual recording, of which I present a small excerpt.
From WOL in the nation's capital, the Coast to Coast Mutual Network presents Colonel Charles A. Lindbergh, who will speak to you on neutrality and war. Colonel Charles Lindbergh.
Tonight, I speak again to the people of this country who are opposed to the United States entering the war, which is now going on in Europe. We are faced with the need of deciding on a policy of American neutrality. The future of our nation and of our civilization rests upon the wisdom and foresight we use. Our bond with Europe is a bond of race and not of political ideology. It is the European race we must preserve. Political progress will follow. Racial strength is vital. Politics a luxury. If the white race is ever seriously threatened, it may then be time for us to take our part in its protection. To fight side by side with English, French, and Germans, but not with one against the other for our mutual destruction. Let us not dissipate our strength or help Europe to dissipate hers in these wars of politics and possession.
With those words of Charles Lindbergh, I bring to a close my collection of quotes without comment. Ladies and gentlemen, dear listeners, we have been lied to and distracted and misled and duped, many of us, for our entire lives. The true history of our nation and the world has been withheld from us, and we and our children and grandchildren are being manipulated to accept a predatory and destructive world government, the so-called New World Order that Bill Clinton and George Bush are so fond of talking about. The people behind the New World Order hate America. They hate every free nation, for free nations are an obstacle to their world power. They are the ones who are taking our children and filling their brains with lies in the public schools. They are the ones who are sponsoring the invasion of our nation by the impoverished masses of the Third World. They are the killers of an entire generation of our people in the womb. The latest just-printed edition of our patriotic magazine, National Vanguard, contains the most revealing article ever written on the history of these subverters of our republic. Every American and every man or woman who cares about the future of our civilization should read this precedent-setting article written by National Alliance Chairman Dr. William Pierce. It also contains very important information on the current drive to disarm and silence all Americans, and much, much more. Information you cannot get from any other source. You can receive a copy of this magazine for a gift of $4 or more to keep this program on the air as our radio offer number 24. Just send $4 or more, as much as you can afford, to the address our announcers will give in a moment. And remember to ask for radio offer number 24.
You have been listening to American Dissident Voices,
a beacon of truth for patriotic Americans and for patriots of our Western civilization around the world.
American Dissident Voices depends upon the voluntary support of its listeners to stay on the air.
Please send the largest gift you can afford today.
Send $1 can tape catalog listing over 300 titles that the controlled media don't want you to see.
Our overseas listeners can substitute two international reply coupons for $1. For a gift of $12 or more, you can receive a high fidelity cassette recording of today's program.
Please give us the call letters of this station, the subject of the program, and today's date.
Write to National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, Post Office Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
That's National Vanguard Books, Department R, P.O. Box 90, Hillsboro, West Virginia, 24946, USA.
And until the next broadcast, this is Richard Cotton reminding you, as always, freedom is not free, free men are not equal, and equal men are not free.
This program is pre-recorded and comes to you from the United States of America.
We'll be right back.